when the human learns a new task, learns to do a new thing, the brain releases dopamine.
Yeah.
Well, my approach on this is kind of like, I've got nature on my side. If I can just get them to go, aha, I got it, their brain's immediately going to give them a response that's going to want them to come back and learn more. And to take a system like a human and make it contrary to the way it's naturally set up to work, as I believe the public schools do, the fact that you're trying to do something that should release pleasure in their brain and you make them absolutely do the opposite.
Yeah.
It's flabbergasting.
Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is March 17th, St. Paddy's Day. I told you it was coming a week ago. And here it is. You know, they say you're supposed to wear green today. I was talking to my wonderful, beautiful partner, Allie, this morning. She said, you're not wearing anything green. And I said, well, I guess I better go to the old wardrobe. And then I realized that I had put on this t-shirt before bed last night. Same t-shirt I decided to wear to work this morning, if you don't mind. Lo and behold, I look down. It's a gray shirt, but it says Boston on it in green for the Boston Celtics. And then what is right below the word Boston? A goddamn shamrock. How serendipitous. I think I nailed it. So we move on to part four here. This is Dr. Darren Tapp. He is a college professor. I will put up some relevant links in the show notes, especially if you're local and you might be looking for some supplemental education services in the area of math. And much of our conversation centers around a new endeavor. He started tutoring elementary school age children in mathematics about 4 months ago. Darren gave a talk called Challenging the Educational Monopoly during our conversation. I tried to rename it Challenging the School Monopoly, and I think he bought into that. In addition to discussing his presentation, we talk about some of the problems we both experienced with math instruction in the public school system in the United States. And maybe that's why America isn't cranking out the scientists that we need. Bill Nye always saying we need more scientists in America. They even started some initiative. It's called STEM. That's an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Bill Nye loves it. He says the government's going to help. It's going to be terrific. But what if it doesn't work? You know, sometimes government stuff doesn't work, folks. And that was what Darren was at Liberty Forum to discuss. So here we go. We got a few more shows in this series coming this week. Kate Baker, Jeffrey Tucker, and I might even throw up a couple of the interviews that I did for other shows while I was at Liberty Forum. All right, thanks everyone. Happy St. Paddy's. Go Celts. Brett, isn't it Celts? No. Celts.
Okay, so I'm very pleased to welcome to School Sucks for the first time, Darren Tapp. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Brett.
And you just gave a talk within the last hour called Challenging the School Monopoly?
The Educational Monopoly, yeah.
The Educational Monopoly. So tell us a little bit about what that was, how that went.
It seems that a lot of people get out of the public school system with what I would consider to be not a desired level of mathematics instruction.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, because mathematics is what I teach, so a lot of, at least some courses in college, I feel should either be like a quick refresher or should not be needed because that should be taught in the public schools.
Like algebra?
Like, yeah, basic algebra.
Basic algebra.
I don't think calculus should be taught. Like the course I'm teaching now, it does arithmetic for, we just did arithmetic for the first test. We didn't have any algebra. And this is, you know, it's a normal school starting in January. And we started algebra, like, we started variables, which is where I say algebra starts.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago.
My goodness.
And it's, what, March already? Yeah. So.
Yeah. So have you talked with anybody else, any of your colleagues, about this problem?
No. I haven't really talked to my contemporaries. There's a little bit of concern because if you could fix this problem, then that would cause less jobs for teachers.
Sure.
So I don't really think contemporaries would be that motivated to try to address the situation. But as somebody, you know, I moved up here from New Hampshire and got in this great community. And as somebody who wants to see people succeed, this certainly is not having adequate math education. I think as technology gets more and more advanced, the math education needs to even be higher.
Yeah, sure.
Because now there's all this other stuff like programming and other, like math really helps with programming. Just the ability to do all that thinking and reasoning will really help with other tasks that are becoming more and more important. I actually estimate there's about $1 trillion that are lost because of lost productivity, like GDP per year, just because of basically inadequate education.
Right.
And I actually have a suspicion that public schools are doing things contrary to education, that you take a human in pristine form, raised by parents. I think an argument can be made that after they're through the 12 years of general generic school, if they'd ever get a chance to like go higher in the math track, that the result actually might be less desirable than if they just sat down and watched TV for the 12 years. I have that suspicion, because like if you were hiring somebody and they didn't know algebra, but then you could teach them in a month or two, that's sure. a lot more valuable, or at least teach them the part they needed to know.
Yeah,
that would be somebody would rather want to hire than what seems to be the case after people get done with public school, is that they actually are less likely to learn things. They have a mental block that builds in. So one of the things that I identify as a college instructor is that there's a lot of math anxiety. There's a lot of math anxiety, a lot of test anxiety, and I'm talking, you know, adults of 18 years of age or adults of 37 or adults of 52. There's still some math anxiety there. I think if you take more of an objective approach to this math anxiety, there is really no objective reason there should be math anxiety. I mean, I joke with my students. I say, you know, math problems are the best problems. Math problems are better than boyfriend-girlfriend problems. They're better than relationship problems, better than family problems, better than health problems, better than financial problems. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Right? Math like problems, it's in the book, and you can do it or not. But, you know, it's the only detriment it has on your life is this artificial grading system that schools come up with. And that's the only thing that can actually be detrimental to you, I believe, like when you're going through grade school.
Sure, yeah.
So that's why I'm developing a curriculum for young people. So young is like 6, 7, 8. I might be switching to 7, 8, 9. You know, I'm just finding the right target group. And so I'm developing basically an arithmetic curriculum. And my goal in it is more than actually teaching the arithmetic. My goal is to, when they're done with the, well, however long it lasts, when they're done.
With you, yeah.
With me. That they're not anxious about math. That's my main goal, okay?
Right.
I have objectives, as any normal curriculum would have. You know, the student should be able to add proficiently several digits, multiply several digits, divide without a calculator. I mean, as they go up, I would want to do order operations, other things. I have certain objectives that I would want them to be proficient at. But I think that when you start introducing grades and you start introducing tests, which tests are there to get grades, right? You immediately introduce a level of anxiety that does not need to be there, certainly at the young person education level.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you this too. You're talking about a specific age range. One of the most interesting things I did in my career while I was tutoring, this girl, this was a funny story. She was in eighth grade. She said, I hate my math teacher and I want to be taken out of his class and okay. I want to tutor. And I thought that was very bold and assertive and I liked it. And I was the tutor who got to work with her. We cruised through the pre-algebra book, and I'm not a math professor, mind you, or even a math teacher. We cruised through that book and were able to demonstrate mastery according to the school standards in 3 months.
Yeah.
So when you talk about, you know, having those skills for that age group, that you mentioned 7 through 9, right?
Yeah, like addition. Right now, we're just working on addition, and I'm having to do one digit multiplication now. We're still building on that.
Right, and minus the anxiety that they might be picking up
grades,
in school.
Yeah, no grades, no tests, and so no anxiety.
I know this is kind of a generalization, but do you feel like students could be progressing through math much more quickly than they do in school?
Well, I had that suspicion for a while.
Yeah,
I started teaching young people just to kind of test this suspicion. I would say I was very ambitious at the beginning. I wanted to learn everything, you know, in one day or 5 days.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And that's one reason that's so great that I'm actually in the fields doing this, because I'm getting that feedback. So now I'm able to, like, try to scope it out a little bit. A reasonable goal with what I'm doing might be to get a 7. Well, she just turned 8. I might be able to get her to be doing algebra in about 3 years, you know, 11 or 12 years old doing algebra. I think that that's not an unreasonable goal.
So let me just ask you, I know this might be kind of a difficult question to answer, but obviously there's a lot of home educating parents in my audience, and they're not really using any of the school's metrics or assessments, but they probably have concern, you know, like, are we ready to move on? When you talk about proficiency in something like multiplication or division, as a tutor, what would you be looking for?
Well, I've only been working with young people for 4 months.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But one of the activities I have the students, I give them a blank multiplication table. I put the numbers in the top and the side, and they have to fill in the rest of it. And that's part of the approach I'm taking. I'm trying to downplay rote memorization.
Yeah.
And do more like internalize all the information. So I give them a blank multiplication table and ask them to fill it in. And I try to tell them how they can learn, like they can use 5 times 5 to get 5 times 6. And they can use 5 times 6 to get 6 times 6. I try to tell them that.
Sure.
Way, so that they don't have to memorize anything, actually. When they make up their own problems and do them based on two-digit multiplications, okay, let's do 3. And then after 3, 4 is a bit overkill. Mm-hmm. They should know how to do it, but they don't have to keep doing it over and over and over.
But they should at that point
they
be
should
able
know
to
how
create.
To, yeah, they should know how to extrapolate what they're doing. So, and then I would consider them proficient. So my last Tuesday, I sat down with an 8-year-old, and she would make up a number.
Yeah,
I wrote that number down. She make up another number, 3-digit number. Wrote that number down, all 3-digit numbers. And then I try to help her add this, and I wrote everything down. And then she's like, "Can we do 4-digit and 4-digit?" Like, yes. And I showed her how to do it. So we did 4-5 questions or something. I have a picture of the work, so I have it documented. Anyway, so we did 4 or 5 questions. And then on the next row, I wrote down the numbers she just came up with in her head and asked her, and then I handed the pen to her and had her add them. And she was doing it, like she did it for the next 4 ones. And then we did a multiplication table, and I just showed her how she could use the multi-digit addition on the multiplication table. I look at what level of help they need. Do they need me to actually work it out for them? Do they need me to confirm that it's the right answer, right, which was a better level of proficiency?
Yeah.
Right, because but at the end, I purposely stopped confirming that she was getting the right answer because I want her to have that confidence.
Yeah.
That's one thing. When I was going through math, I did pretty well in math. My mom always said, "Oh, you just have so much confidence when you get your answer," and blah blah blah. So I want to bring out confidence in the young people when they're doing their mathematics as well.
By kind of stripping out all the things that are so painful about it for us in school, it seems. That's a big part of what you do.
The only thing I'm really stripping out is grades and tests.
Exactly.
And then I have a whole bunch of activities that really have no objectives. Like if you're actually forming curriculum, you have objectives. And then I have a whole bunch of activities with no objectives. Like we built Platonic solids. There's nothing I really can determine if they're proficient in.
Yeah.
We build it with gumdrops and toothpicks. That doesn't have an objective. But by having an activity set up and ready to go, especially, and this is kind of an artistic activity, they end up doing other stuff than playtime. They end up making a 3D lattice, right?
Yeah.
Which is something I wouldn't teach a 7-year-old. But after you built one, you might as well say, "Hey, you just built a 3D lattice. That's a 3-dimensional lattice. Look, you can go to the left and right, you know, and then it's right in front of you." And that's part of this removing layers of abstraction. If you've got it right, if you can like point to it, you've removed layers of abstraction. So they just built a cube, and then they thought, and I mean, when I say they, it's kind of a group project, and I didn't plan for it to be a group project. They just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually started to specialize their labor. It's just crazy what they, I mean, kids will just do stuff. And one thing I've been hesitant to say in the formal presentations and everything I've done, but I need to say it somewhere. Okay,
sure.
So I'm going to say it here. So there are studies done. I believe they're like biological studies that say when the human learns a new task, learns to do a new thing, what happens in the brain is similar to the brain releases dopamine. But the whole, like when you learn a new task, that's general in what happens just physiologically with humans.
Yeah.
But actually, you could say that the result after you learn something new is similar to the effects of an opiate on the brain. My approach on this is kind of like, I've got nature on my side. If I can just get them to go, aha, I got it, their brain's immediately going to give them the right response or a response that's going to want them to come back
yeah.
and learn more. And to take a system like a human and make it like contrary to the way it's supposed to, like the way it's naturally set up to work, as I believe the public schools do. The fact that you're trying to do something that should release pleasure in their brain, and you make them absolutely do the opposite.
Yeah.
It's flabbergasting.
Yeah, it seems like there's an overemphasis on memorization, which we already mentioned. And I found that math, I mean, just from my own learning experience, and I understand it's different for everybody, but math was a combination of memorization and computation skills that have to be built, that have to be practiced confidently. So, I mean, the multiplication table is a great example of that, right?
Yeah.
So, like, say I can't remember what 8 times 9 is.
Right.
I say, okay, well, I definitely know what 8 times 10 is,
right,
because that's like a marker, memory point.
Yeah.
But then I can just, if I have some confidence with computational abilities, especially in my head, which is great, -8 to get 9. And when you see that matrix and you understand how that works and you can count your way down. So I know that's a basic example, but it's kind of like what you can remember and what you're confident working out on your own.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what I found when I was tutoring the SAT mostly, which goes up to like some entry-level algebra 2.
Right.
Kids weren't given any context for what they were learning. Like, they weren't explained. It wasn't explained to them, like, why formulas did certain things. You know, the distance formula looks like this crazy magic spell. That's how I always describe it. But it's just the Pythagorean theorem,
yeah,
written in a way that you can figure out the distances, you know, of lines on an XY coordinate plane. And no one ever memorizes the distance formula because they've never been told what it is.
Yeah.
If you were told what the distance formula is trying to represent, you could be like, okay, yeah, then it would be the change in the height and the change in the, you know, the change in the X and the change in the Y. And then you would just kind of do the same thing you do to find out the sides of any triangle.
Yeah.
But they don't see it that way, so it's lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of the formulas are like that. There's never this contextual understanding that would help with memorization, that would build confidence. So when you talk about how bad the government schooling is, it's just a problem on so many different levels that, like,
It's a general philosophy that's a problem.
And I was a bad tutor for a while because I would just assume, like, you're a college professor and you're talking about the remedial stuff that you're having to do. Like, I would just say, all right, you know, this is a test. This is basically SAT tips. So if you have any, you know, questions about algebra, geometry, you know, the rules or the principles, just shout it out. It's okay if you forgot something, but I'm just going to assume you know all this stuff. What a mistake.
Yep.
Because the other thing, too, is like if kids feel like they should have learned something in ninth grade and here they are in 11th grade getting ready for the SAT, they might not raise their hand. I mean, do you kind of struggle with those emotional challenges in your classes?
Yes. Teaching, you have to consider the personality of the student.
Yeah.
There are some students that are not at the level I would want them to be, but they will be very vocal.
Yeah.
And that's actually the best thing they possibly could be.
Sure.
Is very vocal, because then I know that I need to give that extra explanation. But I know there's a lot of students that they certainly do not want to speak up in class. And I'm actually kind of lucky if I can get them to speak up like one-on-one.
What I wound up saying, the way I tried to get people to speak up, I'd say, if you don't know something, don't be embarrassed. For being willing to speak up, you will actually become the hero of several other people in the room who didn't speak up but had the same exact question.
Yeah.
As I mean, I did this for more than 5 years,
mm-hmm,
the SAT stuff. So by, you know, after doing it for a little while, I realized, like, oh, no, people don't actually know this stuff that I'm just assuming they know, and had to slow the class down. But that also makes me identify with what I'm thinking one of your concerns is like, wow, we could be cruising way ahead if we weren't stuck here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you're finding the same thing. Like, you talked about being hung up.
Like, adding fractions is a very common thing in remedial classes in college. Adding fractions is something I explain over and over and over and over and over. So I'm hoping, you know, with the 7-year-olds that I actually learn how to teach adding fractions.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of hard to do at the college level because you have to teach so much. You're expected to teach so much right out the gate, so
sure,
you can't just say, okay, let's take a month and learn about fractions.
Yeah.
But with 7-year-olds, like, yeah, you can take a month. You can take three months. You can take 5 months, learn about fractions. Maybe, you know, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I remember with my education, I think I learned about fractions in third grade. It took about the whole year. I mean, they spent the whole year, like, talking about fractions.
I don't even remember seeing it. I mean, I could be misremembering, but I don't even see a. I don't remember even seeing a fraction before I was like in fifth
or
sixth grade.
Well, I did go to a Catholic high school.
So,
Catholic grade school.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know.
So the title of your talk, Challenging the Educational Monopoly, one of the things that I wanted to focus on, there's two more things that I wanted to touch on with you, but the work you're doing today, like outside of the college, especially what we've been talking about with these kids, what do you see as the best way to challenge the current educational, or more appropriately, schooling monopoly?
Okay, yeah. Let's challenge the schooling monopoly. The only thing you really can do in a peaceful way is try to outcompete schooling monopoly by having I'm doing the same for the homeschoolers, meet them once a week, and what that's allowing me to do is basically develop a product. And so once you have a superior product, I think parents, with their natural concern for their children, I'm expecting at some point parents are going to be my allies.
Yeah,
there's several forms that could take. It might be parents agitating for a more conscious education-focused arithmetic curriculum in the grade schools, in the public grade schools.
Yeah.
And or it could be parents pulling their children out of the grade schools in order to, if I had a vision of grandeur, in order to like go to arithmetic lesson. I think of what I'm doing now is like you might have a child that goes to piano lessons.
Yeah.
Right? You piano lesson. I think of it more, that's kind of what I'm doing. It's just I'm not teaching about the piano, I'm teaching arithmetic.
Right.
And
yeah.
So I think that this type of model, if parents are happy to remove their kids from public schools, could maybe be extremely successful because you get to basically choose a la carte.
Yes.
You can make courses can be tailored to what's needed. You know, I'm thinking algebra might need to meet three times a week, arithmetic once a week. Calculus five times a week. You know, calculus when the students are motivated five times a week, but you can tailor the amount you needed based on the subject you're trying to teach.
Yeah, all the things the public school does well, like, you know, indoctrination, military recruitment, bad history, preparing people for customer service jobs.
Yeah.
One place where they really fall down is flexibility, obviously. And it's just like a bureaucratic system.
Right.
I was talking to Jody Underwood this morning because she gave a talk about this yesterday, and she had 11 problems with the government school system. And that was really one of them that... I remember sitting in history class, but now that I'm talking to you, I also remember sitting in math class and like kind of waking up for a second and being like, yeah, that was kind of interesting, but couldn't be like, well, I want to learn more about that because we're on to the next thing, or it's only one small thing. And what's stolen from a lot of kids is the opportunity to use their interest and motivation to actually build valuable skills.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So being flexible, allow them to do what they want to do. And I mean, when I designed this activity I'm doing now, I had the students meet for an hour and a half. And that's what I'm still doing. And it's kind of, and it's working out the way I kind of thought it would. Since I'm doing a non-authoritarian teaching style, like learn this now type thing, I was assuming that they're going to go off on tangents and do random things. Like, for example, a student that just wanted to draw a rainbow.
Yeah.
So she drew a rainbow. And so I thought I was going to lose her for the rest of the hour and a half. But as soon as she got that out of her system and got a rainbow drawn, she said, I'm going to write math equations. I mean, she literally said, I'm going to write math equations. And she wrote, you know, 2 plus 3 equals 5. And then she actually ended up writing 10 plus 10 plus 10 plus 10, 10 times equals 100.
Yeah.
That gave me goosebumps because I'm like, that might, she's gravitating towards the base. And since I started out with the base independent arithmetic,
yeah,
I was like, oh, well, maybe something I said about that base is actually set in, you know, different base, like base 6 we were talking about earlier. So, but the hour and a half, I really, a half an hour is budgeted for whatever crazy thing a 6-year-old's gonna do, like draw a rainbow or whatever. And then the I only expect to get like an hour of quality instruction in.
Sure.
But and I don't feel bad about that at all.
You're not rushing or making them crank away, because that's where anxiety comes from.
And they want to stay after the hour and a half. I sometimes stay 2 hours because they just keep going. Or
sure,
you know, like I mean, and they're all activities. Like I actually had them play with compasses. In our Liberty community, I was like, I was a little bit worried giving 7-year-olds a sharp tip with on a compass. But the parents had no problem with it, and their parents are the bosses as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a problem. They just would feel the tip and say, wow, that's sharp. Yeah, it's sharp. And it'd be, yeah, it's sharp. Be careful. And they would draw their circles and all that. I showed them how to bisect lines and how to bisect angles, but they didn't pick up. But it doesn't need to pick up, right? I showed them that. They said, "Oh, that's neat." And then, like, I'm going to draw. I had one student drew concentric circles. Okay, great. And then I got to tell this a 7-year-old what concentric circles were. That's what you're drawing.
Yeah.
And then the fact that she's drawing it while I'm telling her is taking that level of abstraction away. It's like, oh, that's concentric means same center and all that. You could just do all kinds of random stuff that you weren't really planning to do just based on whatever they do.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a huge eye-opener for me. The first time I had an opportunity to work with a kid that wasn't checklist schooling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you can do that. Like, I'm standing there with a clipboard. That's how you feel sometimes in those more rigid environments. So I remember working with this kid. He was interested in, like, ancient aliens and UFOs.
Yeah.
And, you know, we made it work. He read better. He did math better by the end of the years. And all we did was ride on where his enthusiasm went.
Yeah.
So it's great that you're doing that.
And like, before the building the platonic solids, I teach him how here's an octahedron. I have a picture of it. And, like, they'll say, oh, is this octahedron? And so an octahedron kind of is a square, and there's a pyramid. But they had a triangle where there's supposed to be a square. And so instead of saying, no, you're wrong, I just say, no, you see how this is a triangle here, not a square?
Yeah.
I don't know any other term for it, but I said, that's a bipyramid over triangle. An octahedron's a bipyramid over square. And I mean, when else are you going to get to tell a 7-year-old, bipyramid. The word bipyramid. No, but adults don't know the word bipyramid.
Exactly. I just learned it.
But the fact that they brought it to you and you're like, oh, well, that's what I would call this. You know, I do have an extreme math background. I don't think it's very harmful to introduce these words to kids. I mean, when they're in context. If I had like a list of words and bipyramids on a list of words, come back next week and know these words, forget it. They're not gonna know them. And even if they know them, they're just gonna memorize it. They're not even gonna like internalize it.
Right.
Like, but you see how this is a triangle and this has a square, then they're like, oh, and then because of the way the activity is structured, it's not like you get a bad grade. It's like, that looks really nice. It's a bipyramid over a triangle.
There's something more than a letter to take away from it in the long run.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, okay, and they're 7. I mean, they got years to do whatever they need to do.
So one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is we had this conversation about a month ago. We were just talking a little bit about what you were doing. I was really encouraged by it. It sounded really cool. I looked at your slides for your presentation, and it looks like you're getting great results. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, wanted to let people know what you're doing, encourage what you're doing. Yep. And do you have a website?
They can go to darrentapp.com. And at the top, I put links to, like, the syllabus for the first 2 months. I did what I call the arithmetic playground. The next 2 months I did a geometric playground. Now I'm starting a measurement playground.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm doing the same students, like, oh, here's a time to talk about arithmetic. I know we're doing geometry, but let's, you know, I'm not strict on what type of topic we're studying. It's just the activities I plan are based on this. So you can read my syllabi there. I have my PGP key there, which is enough to email me if you need to, or you can email me at tapdarren@gmail.com.
And people can also see you in action if they want, because you got a show where you talk about cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's an unrelated project. I do a show at Neo Cash Radio.
Yeah.
NeoCashRadio.com. And so every Sunday we put up a half an hour of content that discusses what's happening with the crypto world.
Awesome.
And, you know, we try to talk about current events, economics and finance, and we try to bring it up in the context of cryptocurrencies as well.
Awesome.
That's what the show is about, Neo Cash Radio. Now, this relates to how does this challenge the state was the question on Free Talk Live last night. And I think that, well, I mean, if you take something like Bitcoin, I think we need more of that. I think we need more people who are raised in basically a non-aggressive way, like a way that's not going to encourage them to go on into kind of aggressive profession.
Sure, yeah.
To have that extreme math background so that we can get these amazing technological breakthroughs.
Yeah, there's stuff to do outside of the NSA.
So I mean, I think they're certainly related. I expressed on Free Talk Live last night how I was trying to teach 7-year-olds modular arithmetic, which is used in Bitcoin, but I think I've had it out. I brought out like third meeting, and that was probably a mistake. I just kind of see if it sticks. And then when something sticks, that gives you like your foot in, and you can build and off of that. And
build off the interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And the knowledge. Once they've internalized part of it, like addition, you're like, oh, now you can add. Now all this other stuff's accessible to you. And then I think that's like a feedback loop. You saw my slides, like there was like before and after, like the first, like the third week of when this 4 months I've been working with the kids. You know, she still wrote "I love math" at the bottom. You know, with a heart.
I saw that. Yeah,
I love that. And then we were doing three ditch in addition, 3 or 4 months later, and she wrote "I love math" at the bottom. And I mean, of course, the first time she wrote it, I was like really, really, you know, that was emotional for me because that never happens in my remedial algebra class. It will happen in calculus, it's more of an adult way. Like, they'll just say, I really like math. And it'll be like, you know, 4 months into the semester. But I was really touched because that's what I'm trying to do, is make them like math, or at least encourage them to like math.
Yeah, excellent. So. That's a great way to finish. Darren Tapp, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm really encouraged by what you're doing, and I look forward to updates.
And just a clarification, that website, I said darrentapp.com. My last name has two P's, T-A-P-P, D-A-R-R-E-N-T-A-P-P.
Cool. Thank you.
Darrentapp.com.